statement.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
And I'm AY.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
We're going to do something fun this time, something with a little bit more.
We are going to be fun. Last time we had AY on, we talked about the Race Together campaign. But this time, we're going to talk about yarn. Yarn comes from sheep. No, I'm kidding. We're going to talk about grad school.
Yes. Turns out there are things that make me smile and things that I like, so.
One of them is yarn.
But yeah, we want to do this because, AY, you've had some wonderful news recently. What's your wonderful news?
I have been accepted into the PhD program in philosophy at the University of Washington at Seattle. Yay! It was one of my top choice schools, and so I'm gonna be moving to Seattle in September, and I'm so excited.
In which case, you will have to digitally commute to be in the podcast.
Yes, yeah. Yes, that's okay
though.
I believe that there are like ways in which you can actually connect one computer to another over long distances in order to share information.
Oh my god!
So we'll have to figure out how to like make that happen.
We'll work on
it.
It's, it'll be fine.
So we're gonna talk about grad school and give you some advice. Like, for instance, everything I learned from Twilight is it's going to be rainy where you're going,
so you should
get a good umbrella.
Yes.
And
I've already visited the city, and it rained every single day that I was there.
So
every day.
The interesting thing, Ryan, is your education on Seattle comes from Twilight, and my education on Seattle comes from Shadowrun, so this is going to be pretty screwed up.
Well,
and my education on Seattle comes from having visited there, so
tell
basically
me all you're an authority.
Twilight and a little bit of time where grunge became a thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was a thing.
We're a lot of plaid. Icebreaker is why go to grad school? Why bother? Why do it?
I can't say why everybody should go to grad school. I know I went to grad school because I wasn't ready to go into the real world. It was high school all over again. I did a fifth year in high school because I wasn't ready to move on. And then I realized that I had outgrown that pond and it was time to move on. And when it came to grad school, I finished my 4 years and realized I wasn't ready for the outside world. You know, it was kind of a big, scary place. So I did grad school and realized I wasn't an academic, but I still learned something. So I say go to grad school because you meet great people and you get exposed to different ideas. Especially go to grad school. I would say I liked going to UW for my grad studies, but there's a part of me that wishes I had gone elsewhere just to expose myself to something new. But that's why I say to go is to
expose yourself?
Just to hermit yourself away from the real world and expose yourself to different things. Yeah.
Hey, what?
Hey, kids! I also did a motion of opening up my jacket and exposing myself.
It's okay, she's not wearing a jacket.
I am going to grad school because I want to get a PhD in philosophy. I grew up in a family that always expected me to go to university, always expected me to go to grad school, and so I think from a very young age I always saw myself as an academic, and then it was a very happy accident that I also enjoyed academia. And I love research, I love reading philosophy, and I want to write my own philosophy and produce a substantial body of work in philosophical theory. And so that's why I'm going to grad school. If there's any kind of career that I'm going to be doing afterwards, I know that I want it to be heavily theory-based. And so it's also, for me, in a lot of ways, career preparation.
I just had a crushing realization. I was the kind of grad student that took the space away from somebody like you who deserved to go to grad school. I was there literally. Taking up space from somebody who probably would have did more with the academic opportunity. I feel terrible now.
Now that you're existentially crushed.
Yeah.
I think that you should go to grad school to put on your grown-up pants. One of the things, I spent a bunch of my undergrad not understanding it. My family never expected me to go to university. I believe the set standard was don't go to jail. Which was a possibility for a while. But no, going
I didn't know that about you.
Well, you know, I misspent youth. It wasn't that much of a possibility.
Suggestion.
One time. One treason to say act and everybody gets all upset.
One time. People don't like to forget.
No, it was I came out of it, and one of the things I learned in grad school was it set me up for starting to treat my professors, who I had been working for, like colleagues, who I would be working with if I went onward. It also taught me that I did not want to go onward. Well, no, a good master's program teaches you whether or not you're ready for a PhD. And I've talked about it before. I talked about Jesse, my office mate, who's doing his PhD at Western. And he sat at the desk next to me, and we had the exact same grad school experience, except everything that he did, he loved it, and he threw himself into it. Mm-hmm. He learned a whole new kind of physics to do his thesis, which was amazing. He did his philosophy of quantum mechanics. And I, on the other hand, was like, okay, if I write 19 pages, I can go back to doing what I'm doing, which was making YouTube videos, podcasting, designing websites, doing tech support, running charity events, like all this other stuff that I was doing, and I was doing grad school in between those things. And what I realized is that I am doing grad school in between those things. And if I go on to a PhD, that is not a level of commitment. Like, it requires a great deal more commitment than I am apparently willing to give it.
Mm.
Because it is not what I really want to do.
How horribly sober and mature of you.
It was wonderful. But I mean it was, part of it was realizing that these people who I had looked up to for you know, I always talked about my profs as they're the people I get to grow up and be. And they're aware of that.
Jim.
But there was that notion where I was never going to grow up and be them. I just had to start being them right away. Because that was what they had to do. And it was neat to sort of, I think a good master's program will do that. It will teach you to sort of put on your grown-up pants and start, stop thinking of yourself as a student and start thinking of yourself as a researcher. As someone capable of contributing to a field. And in a master's program, you're usually not, but you ideally grow to fill that role in a PhD. So yeah. So in a previous podcast, which will be over Huck's face, or in the show notes for those of you listening, we talked about our philosophy stories, because Huck and I both have master's degrees in philosophy, and
AY has a bachelor's in philosophy.
AY has a bachelor's, but she just got accepted to a PhD program, which makes her cooler than us.
I'll add one extra letter, like, numerically. We have two.
Yeah, it's three.
I'm actually going to have five, because I'll also put MA.
Yeah, that's true. But, no, we...
Seven.
We talked about our philosophy stories and how we ended up studying philosophy. And now that AY, you are here, I would like to hear your philosophy story, which we deliberately didn't talk about in pre-show.
Okay, so this is a surprise for them too. My philosophy story, I feel as though my philosophy story in a lot of ways comes full circle. So the current step in my philosophy story is that I'm going into my PhD program. With the intention of producing something interesting that I could use as a stepping stone for a career as a researcher. And when I think my philosophy story actually started when I was 13, when I became vegetarian. And that was 10 years ago. I'm so old. But
we will never speak of age again on this podcast.
I am the only vegetarian in my entire family, and when I say entire, I mean full extended family, all 50 cousins on my dad's side and all 100 and something on my mom's side. My family's huge. I'm the only vegetarian, and so when I made that choice, I had to defend it dozens and dozens of times, and I think in a lot of ways that was my first experience with critical thinking over a coherent moral system. And the reason I became vegetarian was because I was interested in environmental ethics and animal ethics, and so I actually started off my undergrad in environmental science, thinking that I was going to do research in carbon sequestration. I thought that I was going to develop the thing that would help solve global warming. Again, at that point, I intended to go to grad school and do a PhD. And then in my very first semester, I took environmental ethics, philosophy 220. I don't know if they've changed the course code, but it was philosophy 220 that changed my entire life and ruined me. Because it was the first time I had a chance to really engage theoretically and theoretically in like a structured environment, with the questions that I had been wondering for years. And it was my first encounter with other people who cared about the underlying reasons why we should do things beyond, oh, it's probably better than not doing them. And I found that to be a liberatory practice. It was exciting to read things that challenged me and to write about what those challenges were, and not just write about the challenges, but actually try to respond to the philosophers. That was really cool. And of course, when you're in first year, you think you know everything. So I thought that...
I ran across some of my first year papers when I was filing some stuff, and they're embarrassing.
I thought I had it all figured out. I was like, this is amazing. And so I changed my plan from wanting to do carbon sequestration research to wanting to do environmental ethics, and changed my major to philosophy. And since then, I've discovered whole new branches of philosophy that I love even more. So that's my story. Now I want to get even deeper into them.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, that's not very, like,
no, I mean,
exciting. There was no big revelation.
Ryan's was that he didn't work out as an engineer, and mine was that one day my computer's power supply died.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, you're doing pretty well. No, okay. The takeaway is that all philosophers are sort of fundamentally damaged in that once we sort of hit it, we can't not do it,
mm-hmm.
ever,
mm-hmm.
and that becomes a problem. I mean, I guess worse is being a person who practices philosophy, or studies philosophy, who can stop doing it, which sort of seems deeply unfortunate,
mm-hmm.
at least to me.
Also, the trauma of realizing that you can't ever not ask a question. Like, even if you don't vocalize it, the wonder
it's there.
Is
yeah,
always
yeah.
in your head.
You're like, but what if we... No,
don't even ask it, but you can't. You have to ask.
Yeah.
The wonder is always burning at you.
Yeah.
Mm. Uh-huh. Need some Valtrex for your philosophical brain.
So, what do you think grad school is going to be like?
I think it's going to be amazing. I think it's going to be significantly better than my undergrad. Not because my undergrad was bad, but because I think that grad school is going to allow me to do more of the things that I've loved about philosophy so far.
Fair enough.
So, and I get to teach. Mm. So excited.
And you get
to
grade.
Teach. Yeah. I'm not excited about that part.
No, honestly, I will break from our show notes for a moment to talk about grading.
Okay.
I
don't expect it to be
a
pleasurable.
The super secret part of grading papers, which is actually one of the things I miss most about grad school, weirdly enough,
mm-hmm.
is grading papers is what makes a person a better scholar.
Because
what you have are 30 instances.
Mm-hmm.
of the same argument
mm-hmm.
in front of you.
Stated
and you have
correctly.
Well no, but even if they're stated correctly. I mean there's only in any paper topic that you give out in like a first or a second year course, even a third year course, there's only gonna be sort of a subset of papers that you get out of that. If you're talking about, you know, consequentialism, there's gonna be the trolley problem papers. There's
mm-hmm.
gonna be the surgery papers. There's gonna be the who's Jeremy Bentham papers. There's gonna be a sort of set of them. And you have to fully appreciate the nuance of whatever that topic is in order to grade these things responsibly. You have to, you can just throw them down the stairs and figure it out from there, but
that's what I'm gonna do.
Usually frowned upon. And the practice of reading all these things and grading them responsibly, if you didn't understand the nuance at the beginning, you will certainly understand it at the end. You'll be like, no. It is impossible to talk about the trolley problem without talking about the ethics of lever pulling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is not worthwhile to talk about deontology without talking about how, you know, say, how it treats non-sentience. You know, like animals and things like that. Or like, there's all kinds of things where you're like, this part of this argument or this topic is essential. Why is it essential? And you have to justify it, because
mm-hmm.
students will come to you and I'd be like, you didn't talk about this. They're like, why do I have to talk about this?
Because I said so and I'm grading.
But you're a philosophy professor and you can't do that. Like,
damn.
Sometimes it's, yeah, because it was part of the assignment. But sometimes it's like, no, it's because this is an essential part of what you are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You can't talk about Aristotelian virtue ethics without talking about the rule of the mean and the nature of human flourishing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you try... You have missed a vital point. You know? You can't talk about popsicles without talking about the pain in the ass bit where you gotta break the popsicle on whatever and it shatters into a million pieces and no one gets any popsicles.
You have terrible popsicle methodology.
I have giant Hulk hands
what you do is you take the popsicle and you run it under like warm water to loosen it and then you pull the popsicle out because the way you do it, you might break the stick connection to the popsicle.
No, actually now what I do is shatter it with a mighty karate chop. I'm getting pretty good at it.
You're never getting me a
popsicle. Don't
want to
brag.
You're never getting me a popsicle.
If I offered you a popsicle, you would take it.
I would throw it on the floor.
Oh.
And shatter it.
Yeah, shatter it, then I pick it
then
up.
Then no one would have popsicles.
Be littering,
I think one of my favorite parts about grading papers was relearning the material over again. You know what? I probably did not understand Descartes until I had to grade Philosophy 100 papers.
Because at that point, if you don't understand Descartes, what are you doing?
Well, it's just I reflect back. So part of it is like, you have to get over, and I'm not saying like you do this, but one of the first things I had to get over was the idea that there's definitely one right answer, which is not quite true, but that the students are stupid for not getting it, because I reflected back in the first year, and it's like, I didn't understand any of this. I was grasping at straws trying to make heads or tails of it, and without fail, you're going to get a large, for example, with Descartes, you're going to get a large number of papers who misunderstand the point of why he's running this thought experiment, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people just
assume... Wait, what thought experiment for those who haven't, like, read Descartes?
Just the methodologically doubting a way of...
You can find out more about Descartes in the show notes.
Yeah, certain knowledge. Most people, or at least a lot of the students that I graded, tend to take, they think he was serious with these doubts. And it's like, oh, he was... playing with us, you know, kind of deal. So you get the papers where the students are being wrong. And then, so instead of grading it as being wrong, I had to try to figure out a kind of economically valid way, not monetarily, but my time-wise, of being able to give them enough details in my comments in order for them to learn why it was wrong. So I couldn't just say, no, zero. It is, you are missing this. It's kind of like what Jim was saying. Like, you're missing these fundamental premises or these fundamental... supporting pieces in order to get the answer right. And I got maybe one or two challenges, and I graded probably five different courses. Well, because I just kept asking for more papers to grade. And then I got better over time, kind of deal. It's like any other skill. But I found it really rewarding going and relearning things, or even with international justice. I TA for ORN for one, and I'd never taken international justice. So learning it while I'm also grading it, dangerous secret to the students. Like, you know, I was learning it as I was doing it.
It's okay.
But it was really rewarding to be able to step back into Phil 100 or the first level or first year of courses.
I'm so excited.
I mean, if it's my ideal career would be teaching Intro Plato to like high school students or students coming in for first year, or at the local library, just rent out a room and then do Intro Plato. Not because I think Plato got it right, but I think Plato's a good place that you can start with the ideas.
That's an interesting perspective.
Plato would have, I mean, Plato thought he was right when he was writing about the forms,
but
you
could
also
do is buy yourself a toga, stand in the agora, and just quote Plato at people.
We do have a speaker's
shout at people, shout at people while they walk by. No, do what he did and like follow people around town and like demand that they tell you about their profession. And then tell them why you believe they're wrong.
Demand that they justify themselves to
you. Everything they do.
Drink the hemlock because it is better for me to abide by the laws of the state than to run away.
You'll go get punched before you get a chance to drink
yeah,
the hemlock.
Yeah, someone will punch you. Anyway, what was grad school like for you, Ryan?
In a word, unprepared. I don't think I've made it a secret that I am and was a terrible student. And I thought I was ready to go into grad school, and then I got to grad school and I saw the caliber of my peers and I saw the caliber of the work that I thought was expected of me, not the caliber of work that is actually expected. Like, so you think you're supposed to be every essay is supposed to be a publishable piece, right? As opposed to you just need to be.
I don't know what you were writing. My work is flawless.
I was writing terrible, but that's exactly it. Is the caliber of the stuff that you're working on is probably flawless. Mine was very flawed. And so when I finished grad school, I realized that I didn't capitalize on the experience if I had been prepared. Like it took 3 years for me to finish my master's degree. It took 2 years to finish my thesis. I applied to 6 grad schools for a PhD program, burnt through $600 or $600+ plus the GRE.
Plus the GRE.
Which I, you know what, I studied for like 3 days before and I actually scored fairly well. 70th percentile in qualitative, 40th percentile, which is in quantitative, and like I scored the 6 or whatever on the written.
You got a 6 on written?
It was either 5.5 or 6. Like it was.
Yeah, I know. I got 5.5, which burns.
All
me.
Of a sudden, we have our first podcast.
Oh
feud.
My god!
So, but I realized
I aced that part. You got a 6.
I guess. I don't know. I'm just really
don't
good.
Talk to me.
I won an award for essay writing. Like, I'm good at writing essays.
Yeah, I also have won essay awards.
I won it first.
All right, Mr. Powers.
I won it first. I'm going to need you guys to put it away.
Anyways, so I just realized that it was a good experience. I don't regret the experience because, like, you know, a lot of good things came out of it. Met my girlfriend. I met some interesting people. I got a lot of good skills that ended up translating into the job world. I don't regret it, but knowing what I knew at the end, I really wish that I had a different mindset going in, and I could have taken advantage of it more. I could have learned more, like, just the simple, like, sitting in the common area, eating lunch with everybody, right? I didn't necessarily take advantage of that. I was across campus in the CRT office, which, you know, the campus response team office. It was good, but should have, you know, spent time trying to learn more from Matt or trying to learn more from Shannon, or even learning more from my peers, taking in their example, like how studious Nora was. And, you know, she was freaking smart, but she probably also put in a lot of work that I just didn't see in the background, as opposed to joking around in our office. We were just a bunch of jokesters. Xander and Chris and I and Rye, you know, it's not like we were working very hard over
it. Can I put an asterisk on
sure.
the job skills conversation? Because I'd love to talk about that some more, but I think we also have other things that we want to talk about.
We do. My grad school experience was, the cool thing about grad school for me was that they gave me an office. I didn't have an office myself. I shared it with 4 other people, but only really one of whom was ever there. It was Jesse. But what it did was it gave me this feeling of autonomy. I mean, in university, you sort of, you either spend time in social spaces, or you spend time at home, or you spend time in the library working on stuff. But you're always sort of going back and forth. Like, you have a sort of routine. In grad school, I had X amount of things that I had to work on. And that was it. And those X amount of things were not very large. I think I had to write, I had to read about, I don't know, 7 books per term, and I had to write about 70 pages, which is not a lot for a human being getting a master's degree in the humanities. Like, that's
reasonable.
And I'm probably actually overestimating that a little bit. But, because I was just, you know, it didn't take that much time. And so I had all this extra time, and I had this space where all I did was work. So I was in my office from about 8 in the morning until midnight most nights. And I was like, well, I'm here. I gotta do stuff. And I just started blogging. I was just like, we're gonna try a whole bunch of things. So we did the first podcast with the Educated Imagination. From there, I did a ton of social media work. And I started working with research groups. I organized my first charity event from that office. You know, I did all kinds of stuff that I never would have done had I been sitting at home, because I would have been sitting at home playing video games. Or doing that thing that you do when you're a student and you're not studying. You sort of break your time into class, work, and free time. And it was this, I had this notion that no. Grad school is a full-time job. And the more that I treat it like a full-time job, the sort of more I'm going to get out of it. And it was true. I learned how to manage my own projects better. I learned that the only way my own projects were gonna get done is if I went and did them. I mean, that's the thing. Nobody looks over your shoulder on your thesis. Not in the program that I was in. I came into my advisor's office in the first week and I was like, "Hey, all right, thesis, let's go." He said, "Cool. Step one, go away. Come back in three months. Learn what grad school's like. Come back. We'll start on it then. Think about it." But so nobody was looking over my shoulder, unless I wanted them to. So I had to be the one who looked over my own shoulder. And that was sort of the thing that I had resolved to do, was develop my work ethic in such a way that I could look over my own shoulder. Mm-hmm. It mostly worked. We have a podcast.
I'm excited to develop that kind of work ethic. Because I think that in a lot of ways I'm still at a place in my mind where, like, work is something that happens rather than something that I do. Mm-hmm. And every semester it just so happens that I produce papers. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
I put another tooth under my pillow.
No, like, it's and the essay weird fairy sleep visited. Deprived thing.
What does she care? They're not her teeth.
The cobbler, you put the pieces of paper out at night and you wake up in the morning and you have a fully finished paper.
Exactly. The essay elves do them for me overnight and then they write my name on top and I get the grade. And so I'm really excited to, like, just develop more work ethic.
I find that, so as a person whose work ethic has lapsed over the past, say, 6 months, especially like now that I am working full time at a more sort of cerebrally intensive gig, where I solve problems all day, so my brain is actually tired when I come home. It's like working out. Like, you have to sort of keep doing it. If you get out of the habit of working out, you sort of, it's tougher to get back into it. And I'm finding the same thing with working. Is it's harder to start writing again and start writing more. Because I'm not, like, all I did was write. You wonder, when I wrote my thesis, I wrote 3 pages a day. Good or bad, 3 pages. And then I stopped. 3 pages was the limit. When I hit 3 pages, you're done. Because otherwise, I'm just going to keep writing all day, and then I'm going to feel bad about whatever I didn't manage to get done. But, yeah, it's one of those things that I think the best grad students develop, and I say that because I had a lot of good role models for it in grad school. I was probably not one of them. I definitely spent a bunch of time napping on the couch in my office. Also, we had a couch.
Couch naps are the best.
But, yeah, no, for me it was that introduction to sort of complete autonomy in a space where other people were working and where I could work on my own projects. Yeah, I thought that.
That's cool.
So, our next topic was strongest grad school memory, which you don't have any yet.
I have strongest inclinations about what I think will be my strongest grad school memories.
What's your strongest undergrad memory?
My strongest undergrad memory, actually, believe it or not, was, so when you were talking, one of the things that got me really excited, Ryan, was when you were talking about the conversations that you have with your peers and how those are so enriching. And I found that for me, the majority of the philosophy that I've learned has been from my classmates talking after class, has been from, like, the things we talk about while getting beer.
Beer is an important part of any philosophy degree.
Yes, unless you don't drink, and if that's not a part of your life, then that's fine too.
Even then, during university, I spent so much time, I don't drink a drop, and I spent so much time in bars.
Which I feel like that's something that, like, deserves critical attention, is just the relationship between alcohol and academia. Alcohol and any kind of big project.
Well, I always thought that philosophy ended at the bottom of the second glass. Anything that comes after it, it's a different kind of conversation. But for me, the first two glasses was really productive, really interesting conversation. You know what? The ones after that are really interesting and stuff, but it felt like the philosophy stopped at the bottom of the second glass.
The inebriati.
You should come drinking with me, inebriati.
It's from a Mitchell and Webb sketch. We'll link it in the show notes.
Come drinking with me. You'll keep talking about interesting things all night long.
Oh dear.
That sounds really loaded, but what I just mean is that I'm a really, like, I'm a coherent drunk, I believe. But my best number one undergrad memory out of all the amazing conversations I had was once in the philosophy lounge, having a really enlightening and insightful and fun and intense debate about Kanye West and his lyricism, and debates about whether or not Kanye West's lyrics reflect artistry, and if so, to what degree. And just, it was just such a great conversation. It was myself and three other classmates, and then one other person joined in. And at one point, I had looked up the lyrics to Diamonds Are Forever, and I was reading them aloud. And I don't know if you've heard that song, but it's pretty vulgar. And while I was reading them out loud to the conversation, to the group, one of the profs, actually, Matt, I think Jim's thesis advisor?
As well as Ryan's.
And Ryan's. Okay, so Matt walked by, and he stopped and looked at us, and he was like, "Are you having a philosophical debate about Kanye West?" And we were like, yeah. And he's like, "Good. You know, after class conversations are what philosophy lounges are for."
Yep.
And then he walked away shaking his head.
That was the same. That was the same look that he gave me when I was like, "So I wondered my thesis on applied ethics in Dungeons and Dragons." And he went, "In like what?" And like, you know, like intertextual characterized cooperative games. He's like, "Sure."
I can imagine the look he would have given you. You know what he would have done? He would have been like, he has this hand gesture that he does. I think it's supposed to represent the totality of the universe. It's this gesture where he's like, "Sure." Like, it just, absolutely. And he looks at the space that he makes with his hands and nods at it. And that is your approval that you can write about whatever topic you suggested.
So my funny enough, my strongest grad school memory also involves Matt. Matt, in this case, is Matthew Doucette, I believe, associate professor.
Yeah,
at, tenure. The University Congratulations.
Of Congrats.
And I think it was 4:30 in the afternoon, which for reference for anyone in the real world, 4:30 is when university professors knock off for the day. You know, 9 to 5 is not really their thing because classes start at 8:30. So 4:30 is usually. Time to go. He's like getting ready to get on his bike. Literally a bike. And
oh, bicycle. Oh. That was like his figurative bike?
No, like
motorcycle.
His actual bicycle. And I've been super stressed out. We were organizing the first headshots and I had a ton of papers due and I was behind on everything. And I was in that space where you are so stressed about work that you can't work.
Reach.
And I came into his office, and I'm like, "Do you have a minute?" And he's like, "Yes." That was Matt's thing, is he gave me a lot of space, but whenever I needed whenever I needed a supervisor, I had one. And I'm like, "I need you to talk me out of quitting." Gets off his bike, and he's just like, are you going to quit?" I'm like, "I'm not going to quit. I've been at this degree for 8 months. I got 4 months left. I'm going to finish a thesis and graduate. I've come too far. But I want to quit. And I don't know what to do. And I need you to talk me out of quitting." And in like 20 minutes, he had. And I managed to extend my deadlines on a couple of papers. And we figured out a sort of work plan for how to get a couple of my paper prospectuses off the ground, and I was still going to have enough time to run headshots and not worry about that and not let everyone involved in that down. So, yeah, I was juggling too many responsibilities because I had all this autonomy, and so I took on a lot of stuff. And that is apparently a thing that none of us have learned how to stop doing, so we're just going to deal with it. But, yeah, it was that notion that if I had needed, like, that is what I needed right in that moment. That was the moment in grad school when I needed the most supervision. I didn't need a lot of guidance on my paper topics. I knew what I wanted to write about. I didn't need a lot of guidance in classes and seminars because I knew to go and listen and write things. What I needed was a little push to persevere, and that is the thing that I need. The supervisors, I think, are there for in that sense. There is always that point in undergrad too, where you are so unbelievably burdened or stressed, and you cannot figure out how to get out of this hole that you are in. And all you really need is for a person you respect to say, slow down, think clearly and carefully, you can do this.
Matt's really good at helping people de-stuckify.
De-stuckify?
Matt helped me de-stuckify a couple weeks ago. I went to him crying, and I was like, there's so much I have to do, and I feel like I'm just crawling, and I just want to graduate and go to grad school, and I'm so tired. He's like, okay, so what do you have to do? And he pulled out a memo pad and wrote down a list of all the things that I was worried about, and then made them into an ordered list, and was like, you do these things in this order, and then let me know how it goes. And I was like, thanks. And I've been doing them in that order. I've actually been sticking to that
list.
Nicely done.
Anyway, you're up. Let's just keep on the Matty said love train.
Unfortunately, my story involves a different
outsider.
But I have a funny Matt story. Matt told me that if I put TLDR on my thesis, he'd give me $50. I didn't.
Oh, you passed it up.
But he at one point we were talking about it, and he offered that if I did that on my thesis and submitted it to be put into the government records, he'd give me $50 to do that.
Nicely done. So, but what is your strongest grad school
memory? My strongest grad school memory involves somebody else. So when I was in grad school, I oscillated between thinking that I was smart enough to be there and feeling like I didn't belong there. Nobody made me not feel like I belong there, but there was times where I'm just like, this is leaps and bounds ahead of what I am capable of doing.
Was it imposter syndrome?
Yeah,
you feel genuinely unprepared?
Well, no, I didn't feel that that my undergraduate had not prepared me. It just seemed like in undergrad I was so generalist. You know, I liked everything. Everybody else seemed to have that one field that they wanted to work on, and I had no idea what I was doing. And I was trying to make heads or tails, and especially in the pro seminar on truth, which is what we did it on, was really difficult to wrap my mind around sometimes. Granted, because I was a crappy student, I was also shooting myself in the foot. But sometimes I would shoot myself in the foot because I couldn't wrap my mind around it. Mm-hmm. So there would be times, I got this, I'm smart enough to do it, I deserve to be here, and there's other times I didn't. And so there was this one person in grad school. So, Rachel. Mm-hmm. I, for some reason, had in my mind singled her out. I thought she was like the best grad student out of all of us, right? I think she was second year at the time. I don't quite remember. Second year PhD. And
is it Rachel that I know?
Yeah,
she's
Rachel,
intense.
Rachel.
Yeah, so I
she
thought
to crank out work.
Yeah, well, her work ethic's insane.
Absolutely,
but I just thought of her as like the smartest person in the department. Whether or not that was justified or not, for some reason, Rachel was it. And I even sometimes antagonized her,
why are you so good at everything?
Interpersonally, I would challenge her, you know.
Stop
like,
being good at stuff.
She complained once about somebody draining the coffee, and I told her, fucking make some more coffee. You know, like it was just, even though she had made the first pot and then everybody drank it on her, right? You know, it was just one of those weird things, but I looked up to her. And so in the second term of the pro seminar, we had written our papers. We were presenting them to each other, and part of the presentation process is you give your paper 2 weeks out or 1 week out, and you have to write a response to somebody else's paper,
mm-hmm.
conference style, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
So I got, Ben, if you ever watch this, you know that in your first year of your PhD, you fucking were terrible at writing papers. You were so, your language is so unclear in your ideas.
You suck, Ben.
I love you, Ben. I love you, Ben, but your papers at first year fucking sucked. Anyways.
That was downright.
Oh, man.
You suck, Ben.
I don't even know if you knew what you were talking about, Ben. Anyways, I was reading Ben's paper. I just could not understand it. This is one of those moments where I didn't think I was smart enough for it.
Mm.
So I was trying to write, so those papers were what? 10 pages to present, so you had to write like a 5-page response or something like that, and then they had an opportunity to write a 1-page rebuttal to your response. So I'm reading Ben's paper, and I just couldn't crack it. Like, I just didn't know what was going on. And I found one tiny little thing about baldness in there, like, like it had to do with like degrees of understanding something, and he was using baldness as a metaphor for it. Like, it was the first time I ever saw Yul Brynner being evoked as in a paper to make a point. You know, you could be Yul Brynner bald, or you could be like Patrick Stewart bald, or something like that. Right?
Sure. Yeah, those are both different kinds.
Yeah,
of bald.
Different kind of bald. Anyways, I probably have the paper somewhere in my emails, but so I found this and I was super proud of myself, and I wrote on it. Right. So Ben presented his paper, I presented my response, he rebutted. That was fine. Then afterwards, we had gone for drinks, and we were drunk. Rachel and me and a few other people, we were drunk. And this is where the culmination of sort of my strongest grad school moment. Rachel turned to me, and she said, you know, up until today, like, I was questioning whether or not you deserve to be here. But your response to Ben proved that you deserve to be here. It was like validation.
I can't believe she said
well,
that.
Well, she might have, you know what,
up
in my mind.
Up until today, I thought you was stupid.
Okay. To be fair, I'm probably misremembering it. We were drunk.
You were drunk.
And Rachel's never been that mean.
No.
So it's entirely possible that I'm like condensing the emotions, like validating in other words what I was feeling. But to basically to the point of she was unsure whether or not I was cut out for academia. But at that particular moment, by responding to Ben, by being able to like have a laser focus on a particular thing and offer a criticism of his argument, Rachel told me that I had demonstrated to her that I earned or I deserved my place to be there.
You had the chops.
I had the chops. And so coming from Rachel, that meant a lot
to me.
It was just like, yes, I have been. I deserve to be here. Now, again, it took me 2 years afterwards to finish my thesis. And there was a whole host of existential problems with that. But, so, long-winded story, I apologize. That's my strongest grad school memory. Being accepted by somebody that I looked up to as being like the measuring stick to measure myself against.
I feel like
how very Aristotelian of you.
Yeah, that is super Aristotelian. we have with the pre-show all night. We've been making fun of Huck for being a virtuosist.
Yeah,
it's kind of great.
That's okay. He's keeping Philip afoot company.
But no, it's interesting that. Our memories of grad school and undergrad are all stressful.
Like
Huck and I's memories, we're both super stressful, but at the same time,
wow, you just read me there.
They're survival.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so. Would you like some unsolicited grad school advice to finish?
I love when men assume that I need what they have to
offer. Completely unsolicited advice.
Give me wisdom, please.
Well, empty your cup.
What does that mean?
Because this shit's about to overflow.
Oh, okay. Like, be open and receptive to what people have to offer.
Well, no, because your cup's about to be full of shit. But hypothetically, Huck, if you had one piece of advice to give a person about grad school, a person who, say, needed that advice, unlike AY.
I'm flawless, so I don't know why you're advising me.
We're not. We're advising a hypothetical other
person.
Oh,
a hypothetical. Oh, okay.
We have listeners.
Advice away.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how much of this you already do, but definitely.
Hypothetical person.
Hypothetical person.
Not me. I probably already do it.
Probably. I would say, make sure that you seek out those opportunities to further yourself outside of what your classes are. So take a stab and submit an abstract for a conference and write that proposal to get money to get funded to go to the conferences and meet other people outside of your department, especially if you're going to a different department. Learn to have beers with your instructors and get to know their stories and learn what makes them tick and what makes them excited about philosophy, especially because there's going to be times when you yourself question why you're there. For
for whatever reason. And sometimes it's good to hear the positive stories of other people, and it can re-motivate yourself, and having those invigorating conversations. So
I would supplement that by saying, leave your office and campus at least once a week and do something in the city that you live in, because otherwise grad school will eat you.
Well, I'm going to be in Seattle, so there's going to be lots of stuff to do.
So there's going to be tons of awesome stuff to do. Like I said, hypothetical person who's going to grad school in Nebraska.
Yeah. Nebraska
has universities, right?
Yeah, University of Nebraska.
Right, they do a thing with the sports.
I forgot about that as leaving campus is a good idea. Because
I started blogging, so I had to come up with one interesting thing to do during the week that wasn't work on stuff, because otherwise I would just have sealed myself in my office and not have done anything, and it would have been unfortunate, and I would have not met a lot of cool people.
Yeah, I think that's a trap that I've seen a lot of my peers get into, where they don't leave campus, and then they're like,
university
there's nothing to see. Yeah, and they're like, there's nothing to do in the city. Mm. And I'm like, are you serious? You live here and you haven't found anything to do? Mm. Oh, that's because you don't leave campus. There's nothing to do on campus when classes are out.
Yeah. So yeah, to summarize, exploit's the wrong word. Take advantage of opportunities, all opportunities outside of class, and do things that expand your horizons.
My piece of advice is sleep whenever you want. One of the advantages of being of sort of having a grad school type schedule is you have
lots
a lot of
free time.
You have a lot of open time, and you will invariably not get enough sleep. I believe it was sleep more than you think you should, but not as much as you totally want to.
I think that's solid advice.
Like, I was highly fortunate to have a couch in my office where if I, in the middle of the day, after having been staring at a screen for like 6 hours, this assumes that you're not a person who enjoys like walking or going to the gym or doing something that involves being away from screens and concrete. And I would just go and take a nap.
Napping is the way to go.
And I would wake up and I would feel better, and I would go back to writing, and I would be like, it is time to go. But that is sleep more, and
my
sleep whenever you want.
My problem with naps, though, is that I don't take naps. I do sleeps. Like, I'll go down and be like, oh, I'm just going to have, like, a quick siesta, a quick repose. And I'll wake up 5 hours later, and I'm like,
I just slept.
That was not a nap.
I ruled my life with alarms during grad school.
I can't do alarms.
I had alarms that told me when to wake up. I had alarms that told me when to eat food, because otherwise I wouldn't. Because I get focused on something and I just delay it until it's 10 o'clock at night and I'm like, man, I should eat breakfast. So no, I had alarms that told me to eat food so I wouldn't die. That was when I broke up with apples because I'm in love with the perfect apple. That's a story for another time.
Mm-hmm.
But
I don't even know what that refers to.
I'm in love with the perfect apple. Sadly, many apples are not perfect.
Okay.
But
I do have one bit of good concrete advice, though.
Okay. You had a bit
give
of good
some concrete.
This is one, Jim, I'm pretty
you're
sure you'll see, you'll think this is
the
advice
double
lovely.
Advice.
And this is something I know that I'm almost
100%
positive that you have not experienced that. Start your marking earlier than you think you have to.
All right, you're right, you're right.
Because there were plenty of nights when I did not sleep because I left all of my marking to the night before. And
they had to be in.
And they had to be in at 9 a.m. the next morning.
Oy.
And Orend was very clear. You do not get any extensions. You have everything you need to do this. I have and he had a very specific date and time that he was giving it back to the students. Mm-hmm. Non-negotiable, the students.
Well, yeah, you have a responsibility.
Yeah, that's
to the
fair
students.
Though.
So,
I think that's fair.
No, it's totally fair. I'm not saying Orend was not. He would have taken away the responsibility if I had been upfront with him. So, concrete piece of advice. Whatever else is going on,
start
your
marking
earlier than you think you're going to need to.
On your marks. Got it. Got it.
All right.
That's good advice.
Anyway, congratulations on getting into grad school.
Thanks.
Fist bump.
Thanks.
Anyway, I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
I'm AY.
This has been the Concept Crucible Podcast.
Stay awesome.
Oh, I wanted to do it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Stay awesome. I feel like that's a good episode. We should do the slaps.
Alright.
There we go.
Nice.
Oh, that was a good one.